Okay, so another friend of the show recently, if you were with us for our December horoscopes episode, we had a friend of the show reach out to commentate on the fact that I said no one who's a Scorpio should be president. You agreed. We were like, fuck Scorpios. Then someone graciously reached out and let us know that Joe Biden is in fact a Scorpio.
And thank you
for educating us. And then another friend of the show after that horoscope episode came out where I was, you know, self-correcting on the fact that Joe Biden was a Scorpio, mm-hmm. although he's on the Sag cusp. I'm just going to point that out again. I'm looking for the Sagittarian.
Admittedly, yeah.
Admittedly on the cusp. Hillary Clinton is also a Scorpio. And what I've deemed from this is just another example of rampant sexism in America, that Americans didn't want any Scorpio to be president, but like, we're okay if it was an old white dude, but like a lady, absolutely not.
100%.
I feel like the country's in alignment with us, that people inherently don't trust Scorpios all the way and are willing, apparently, to give a pass to the men.
They are. Oh, my God. And of course they are. But it makes me wonder. I don't know. That makes me want to know more about Hillary Clinton. Like knowing that she's a Scorpio makes me feel like there's these like secret
like
extra
layers. Like you don't
layers.
Know her.
Yeah, yeah. And I knew that I never knew her, you know, like because we can't. But it does make me wonder about her deep waters. And it makes me wonder how she's holding on to shit with Bill, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Bill,
resentments.
Scorpios, I mean, I got questions because Scorpios don't love a secret. In fact, they seem to value the truth above all else. And, well, some of them. I've had some Scorpios in my life who seem to...
They have an interesting relationship with secrets is what I would say.
That's what it is. You know what?
It's a secret is like at the forefront of their life somehow, and they have strong opinions about secrets.
Well, maybe this is exactly who should be president from like a corrupt, weird, like how the government works standpoint, because I mean, so many secrets as the president.
To get policy through, you have to.
And you just have to care about secrets so deeply, like as a Scorpio and as the president. Maybe Scorpios are the only people who should be president.
Jesus.
That seems like a stretch.
Yeah.
But
oh, my God. And not to dig at you or support my choice to float the Gemini rather than make them the POTUS, I would just like to remind you that
you didn't float them. You thought you were going to, and then you put yourself on a boat with them.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for reminding me how I've saved you.
Don't stop trying to re-kill me, you asshole.
No. Sorry. There's no floating. You're tethered to the back.
I'm not tethered. Well, no. Unless I'm on an inner tube, like living my best.
We
I
can
love
do that.
Tubing.
I really love tubing.
That's how you get some personal space in this game. Like, oh, we've been boating together on the houseboat, and it's like, it's your turn to go out on the tube and you get a little private time.
That is
That's
really
where people
a good
would
idea.
Masturbate.
Oh my God. The inner tube becomes a masturbatorium, if you will.
Yep, go on.
Okay. I just wanted to briefly mention that our previous POTUS was indeed a Gemini. So the irony of a Gemini to Scorpio shift right now is not lost on me. That's all.
No, that's dark. And I will say there are a lot of Geminis I'm very proud to be affiliated with. Mm-hmm. But the two that rank the lowest in like upsetting affiliations are Trumpster Fire and Kanye.
I knew you were
Gemini.
Gonna say Kanye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one consistently bums me out.
I understand.
What about you? Do you have any Aquarians that you're like pissed about them being Aquarians?
So Carol from The Real Housewives of New York, who
such an oddly specific answer. Go on.
So she is I really liked her on the show, but she's like kind of like cold and aloof and like weirdly detached, and like she dates a guy that's like 20 years younger than her and calls it like a shack up relationship, but like won't admit that they're living together even though they are. And then she has a bunch of cats that are all named Baby, and she's like attached to them, but also seems like maybe she would just like kill them to see what happens. Like the way that she like kind of can coldly like study things or say something strange to me. One time someone brought games to a party and Carol goes, oh, it's very Asian of you to bring games.
Wait, okay. Carol sounds like a shitty Aquarius.
She is weird. And like, I liked her okay on the show and I like when she's on the show. But I recently found out that she was probably friends with, although denies it, but has been photographed many times and has worked with Ghislaine Maxwell. And so now I have a skeptical eye about Carol from The Real Housewives. And
well,
she was
should.
Also friends with Prince Andrew. And so it's like a whole thing.
Nope. I hate to see it. Well, if I could redeem myself for a brief moment and celebrate Tupac Shakur, Morgan Freeman, Lauryn Hill, Bob Dylan, one of my personal favorites, the Olsen twins, my idols, and Stevie Nicks.
The Olsens are Gemini twins?
Yeah, of course. My mom's a Gemini twin.
I know she is. That's incredible. Congratulations, Wendy.
Shout out to Wendy. But yeah, we got some good people in our lengths. Our
I have Rob Thomas. We have a shared birthday.
Oh, Rob. Oh, Andre 3000 and I share a birthday. So.
Oh, that's really a good one. That's
I'm really proud. I'm actually like really proud of that. Shout out to Outkast. Anyway, also welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
You made that up. Listen.
And remember, the greatest myth about the moon is that America went there in Apollo 11. Good night. Good night.
We would take Jamie's grandma's underwear, run them underwater, put them all in the freezer.
All of them, though. So there were none.
Literally every pair.
Ooh, quick pause for a thermometer read. Do you believe in hypnosis?
Like ethically?
Lisa Frank went to high school with the Romneys. And then I'm going to have the second mouth on my back.
That needs feeding.
Needs feeding.
Oh, welcome. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we talk about astrology monthly, but I said weekly. And so maybe I'm trying to work that in now.
We're working it in.
But we also dissect human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, pop culture, whatever we're noodling on at any given time in order to determine why people are the way that they are and why we're letting presidential candidates be Scorpios. That is Jamie Ryan in Los Angeles.
And that is Austin Williams in Chicago. But again, maybe like we really need to reevaluate the value of a Scorpio in a public office.
Maybe we do. Maybe it's their secret shit.
Because also a politician doesn't make like a good friend or family member usually. So it's
I can't imagine that. No.
Maybe then like a moody Scorpio is better suited to keep, you know, the secrets of the state. Anyway, this is not an astrology episode.
No, we talk about all these politicians. I haven't yet. I want to read Obama's new book because, you know, I just want to remember when, you know, people we trusted a little bit more were president.
Golden years.
But this is like a personal issue. Okay. But I get a little concerned about whether people think I read a book if I listen to it on audio instead of reading it.
Interesting.
And so some books, I do. I'm a little self-conscious about that from time to time. And so sometimes I'm like, oh, this book is like too heady for me to like claim that I read it. And, have listened to the audiobook, and I don't know that I think President Obama's book is too heady for me to listen, but what I just, if anybody else faces this problem or any concerns, I have been told that he does some voices on the audio recording of other people, which have solidified that I will be listening to the audio.
And especially lately with like podcasts on the rise and like people like consuming more audio, I feel like audiobook quality has gone up and so many authors read their own books now. And sometimes it almost feels like you're missing part of the story by not listening to it.
I heard that Mariah Carey on her recent memoir sings like several songs.
I really dislike Mariah Carey, but that is hilarious. And of course she does. God, she's probably going to sing at her own wedding or did. Sorry.
I don't know. Mariah Carey had a lot of like crazy shit happen to her. I'm like rooting.
She did
like
with that producer when she was like 19. There was a lot of bullshit.
Yeah, her whole book, she's like really laying it out there. It was some fucked up shit. So,
Yeah, she had to get free later. I am honestly curious about the Mariah story, if I'm honest. Now I'm like, I hate her, but I'll listen to this book.
You know, and she's biracial and they whitewashed the shit
out
of her.
They really did.
Like, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. So I think it could be. Anyway, she sings some songs on the audiobook, okay?
That's hilarious.
That's all you need to know. That's what you need to know. But we're not talking about Obama or Mariah Carey or the famous Geminis in my life. but we are talking about some secrets, so Uh-oh. That feels on theme. And I'd like to just paint a little bit of a picture for you as we dissect some of what we may be calling problematic gambling.
Amazing.
And get into a little bit of gambling addiction. And, you know, there's like problem gambling, and then there's like a further kind of, should I say, like ratcheted up version of it that people like pathological gambling, and they do like paint distinctions between the two of them. It's very interesting. But I'd like to start with a little bit of a secret narrative. And actually, interestingly, when I was digging in on this and finding some kind of clinical reference points of some people telling their tales,
sure,
a lot of British people coming out about this recently. And I'm like, you know, I'm here to hear what the Brits have to say about it. So I will be giving you a little bit of a tale up at the top that was featured in The Guardian, written by our new friend Amelia Hill. And it was published in January of our year of our Satan 2020.
Okay? All right. Thank you, Amelia.
Thank you, Amelia. So basically the premise of this, so the article is called "I Was Living a Secret Life, The Agonizing Rise of Female Gamblers."
And oh. I was like, oh. Oh, my.
Oh, me, oh, my. So what a sensational title. And we'll get into some of this because I have some questions about some of the gendering of this. But I think there's some super interesting stuff here about how, because of the way gambling has shifted, more women are developing gambling problems in a previously like male-dominated issue.
That's interesting. Well, and also women like keep secrets differently, and like women who kill like go about it
differently. Especially when they're Scorpios. I mean, well, come on, full circle.
Then that'd be great at it. Yeah, go on.
We can't know. No. Okay. No, I think there's true. There's a lot of different psychology. So let me paint a picture of the secret life. Nancy gambled away £3,000. So 6K, right?
Yeah.
In USD. Mm-hmm. Her father had saved up, this is dark, for his own funeral. Like, wow, you really tapped into something that feels just inappropriate.
You guys, I guess he won't miss it. Like, is that
gambling? I mean, listen, depends on your gambling thoughts addiction on the afterlife. Is dark. We're going to try and have some lighthearted moments because it's what we do. But I want you to know I do think this is a serious issue. But that just, that when that was the opening line of this article, I was like, come again.
So like, yeah, I'm here to laugh at like the absurdity of it. But I understand, yes, like this is a compassionate thing. But also like this is ridiculous.
Yes, totally. Okay, so it's the thing that she feels most ashamed of having done during her 4-year addiction to online gambling.
Oh, my. Okay?
And at the time, however, she like barely thought twice about scrapping this money for Ooh. Her dad's
Well, she probably
funeral.
Thought she was just going to win it back and give it right back to him.
Well, or maybe there wasn't even that kind of thought process.
You're right.
So female gambling addicts are just as bad as men. And I'm like, yeah, because they're
Clearly,
all people.
Everyone's
Thank you for stating
a gambling
this.
Addict.
And Nancy says that we will get money wherever we can and gamble it away immediately. The extraordinary thing is that during my addiction, no one suspected a thing. Mm. I was gambling online for hours every day. I'd sit down on the settee with my phone in the early evening. And the next thing I knew, it was 3 a.m. And oh, I wow. hadn't moved except to press the same button again and again to work the slots.
Oh my God. And she's just playing slots? That's so boring.
I know. And she says, but my bank account would be empty. Ooh.
Wow.
I don't like it. So here's some stats for you on this. The number of women reporting a gambling problem has risen at double the rate of men over the past 5 years. Hmm. So from 2015 to 2020.
Mm-hmm.
From 2,303 in 2014 to 2015, So in 2014, we had 2,300 people, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the last 5 years, it's upped to 3,100.
Okay.
So percentage-wise, this is a substantial significant increase.
Shift, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the rise, according to GameCare, which is kind of a gambling anonymous support group that I saw a lot of people reference seeking help from.
Okay.
It's spelled GAMCARE. So they drop the E, but I assume it's still GameCare.
Probably. It'd be weird if it was GamCare.
It would be weird, but anything's possible. But they run the National Gambling Helpline in Britain, is my understanding, because mm-hmm. I kept finding it referenced in British articles, right? Mm-hmm. And it's directly attributed to the ease with which women can now gamble online using their phones.
Mm.
I recently was talking about some stuff with the social dilemma on another episode mm-hmm. and just, you know, some kind of things. And so this really reading about this, I was like, wow, you know, I bet that there are a lot more gambling issues because of the accessibility of phones, not just for women, but for men and for statistically everybody. So,
and with targeted ads, especially, like you can get an ad for like a gambling game that you specifically would enjoy, like rather than having to seek it out on your own. That's a completely different situation.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into some of the crossover with video games and gambling and that kind of thing, because I think there's a lot to unpack there. But I really just wanted to highlight the online gambling happening on phones, because I think everybody's like would clock that and go like, oh wow, it's really easy to, you know, fall into this. Because like, how often have any of us become obsessed, you know, we've gone down a rabbit hole with like one thing? There was a period in time where I could not stop playing this Harry Potter video game on my phone.
That's okay, you know, yeah.
And we've all been there.
We have. And I have a solitaire game on my phone where you just like, you play against other people for chips, but then sometimes if you win enough games, or like if you've played for a while, they'll give you like a real dollar to play with. And then it's really hard.
That's how they get you.
After you lose that first free dollar, not to like make a deposit, because they're like, yeah, they're giving you bargains and deals. And yeah, I don't know. I've been trying to just accrue the free dollars here and there. But but it's tough to say no. It's a slippery slope.
It's tough to say no, and I generally try and have a no, like, purchase, like, in-app game vibe rule on my phone. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to say there haven't been, like, a time or two that I've been like, well, I might need this.
I need this potion.
Yeah, we'll get more on that later, okay? So, and that it was, you know, other games. Okay, so in the past, if they, being women in this article, wanted to bet, they had to brave the male-dominated realm of the bookies or find the time and risk the exposure of an arcade. Mm. So now 70% of female gamblers use apps and websites.
It can be a secret shame.
Right. Which 70% is high, because I think a lot of us, you know, associate gambling with like, you know, you're in the casino, or you're somebody who like likes to go to like the racetracks in Kentucky, or, you know, there are like very specific places you'd go. And all of these things that have these big gambling industries, 70% of it is still happening on fucking apps and websites. That's a lot.
Yeah, because not everybody wants to have like a going out experience, like to gamble. Sometimes like you just want to gamble in sweats. But my parents, for example, would never like online gamble, because I think like what they actually like is the act of going to a casino.
Sure. And so like, I think that's true for a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely. And then like, I don't know, maybe for that reason also they're decent at like setting a cap and sticking to it. But yeah, I think it's about something else if you're doing it at home.
Well, and some of it, I think for a lot of us, you know, we can relate to the ease of doing things on home and digitally. And I know certainly in these quarantine corona times.
Oh boy, yeah.
I've had conversations with a lot of friends that like, it's just recklessly easier than ever to, you know, online shop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was having
conversation. We need the dopamine.
Yeah, totally. And I was having a conversation with a friend recently about like the holiday shopping of this time of year.
It's weird.
And she's like, I feel like the marketing campaigns are like, you can't see your family this year, so prove you love them by spending money. And I was
that
like, is this
the
is dark.
Message.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think we can all relate, though, to some of this like instant gratification. You know, you have an iPhone, your credit card information just saved on there, just with your little
Jesus Christ, Apple Pay.
It's very easy. So Nancy, so she would have never gone into a bookies or an arcade. She's like, I would have never begun betting if I hadn't been able to do it, Scorpion, secretly on my phone, she says.
And without barriers to entry, like, how do you, I don't know how to find a bookie. That sounds so scary.
Right. It's probably how people, you know, feel about finding drug dealers capacity, right? Yeah. Like, I think there's a pretty similar line, and it's like, well, how much do you want this? And, like, do you have other people in your life who are into this that could connect you, kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And then people, you know, change their lifestyle to, you know, accommodate habits. Meet the needs, so, right. So she, and this is, I'm like, ooh, this is intense. She had hundreds of different online gambling accounts.
Oh, my.
When I ran out of credit on one, I just go to another site and open a new one. I had 5 credit cards, multiple loans, and loads of high interest payday loans. I was entirely enslaved by gambling. Nancy. Whoa. Okay. By the time Nancy sought help, she had spent £75,000 on gambling and she was £25,000 in debt.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. She used up all of her savings, wages, and any other money she could get her hands on, like that funeral fund.
Yeah, like that.
Like that. She says, it's impossible for a rationally healthy person to understand, but I was in this bubble and couldn't escape. It was all I thought about, gambling and how to pay back my debts. I remember one Wednesday getting home from work and crying and shaking in the kitchen because I knew I had to gamble.
Oh, wow.
Despite her obsession, Nancy didn't show a single outward sign of not being entirely in control. This is the part that floored me, and I was like, and I know names have been changed in this article, but this part, like, floors me. Ready?
I'm ready.
Brace yourself. Even today, only 2 of her best friends know what she's been through. She can't even bear to tell her husband.
What?
I'm like, why do 2 of your friends know this and the person you share finances with doesn't?
And
why?
Well, that's what I was going to, do they, maybe they don't share finances? I don't, how could you, if he has access to any accounts, like, wow, maybe she's like said that she's doing a project or something for $100,000.
Again, this Jesus is like a part Christ. That I shouldn't laugh at, but when I read it, I was like, the fuck?
It's
I
just had to read so it, like, extreme. Yeah.
I am glad that Nancy like had some people in her personal life that she could confide in.
And this reporter.
And I will say, I think anyone who's been in a romantic relationship where, you know, you are like long term or committed in a way that either you're living together or, you know, marriage or not even you're serious and you're just like somebody wants to go on vacation and, you know, maybe the other person's budget is different. I think everyone can own the relatability of it being difficult to talk about your finances with people, but like especially romantic partners, because I think there's like some level of shame of like, how do I, you know, do we handle this the same way? And are you gonna like love me less? I think that's true for like families too. Like,
I think anytime it affects each other, like if you're like about to marry someone who has a horrible credit score, like maybe they should work on that real quick.
Yeah, 100%. That's totally a vibe. And I also think, like, some of it, too, you know, we're the generation of, you know, both student debt, credit card debt, all of it. And it's interesting because I think, in a way, like, millennials and those younger than us, like the Gen Zers and everybody, I think have something even over the Gen Xers of being able to, and we've touched on this on other episodes of the podcast, but being a little bit more fluid with those conversations of being like, hey, I want to hang out with you, but like we have to do something really cheap.
And not feeling so weird about that, you mean?
Yeah, that it's not weird. You know, I've had a good friend of mine who actually quit her job with intention and then the pandemic happened and you know then your plans get a little foiled about how you're spending your time to find another job and then all of a sudden finding another job becomes very difficult anyway.
It does.
She had a friend in who she had entertained and she was like, I want to hang out with, you know, me and like a little group, and she's like, but I like really should not go out to brunch right now. And so we're like, cool, let's have brunch at someone's house, like,
yeah,
you know,
and it doesn't have to be weird. And I do think that that's generational, like even on television, like there's an episode of Friends where they all go to dinner and it's like awkward that some of them like can't afford it, but they don't say anything about it. And that's like right. the whole arc of the episode is that they can't talk about that they can't afford that restaurant. But then right. if that were a situation like on New Girl, they would just have dinner at home. Like it would be something right. that wasn't weird.
Someone would be like, yo, I'm broke right now. And people would be like, cool, let's
yeah,
get a
that
pizza.
Would not like- be like an arc of a show yeah. for millennials.
I don't think so. I don't think so as much. But this checks out to me. I assume, you know, Nancy is an older gal.
She is, yeah. Playing it close to the chest.
Playing it close to the chest. And so I'm glad she has some people she can talk to about. But I would say even with millennials and like us, I think it's easier to maybe talk about it with friends sometimes than it is partners initially, because you're like, ooh, like trying to measure up. And then also mm-hmm. because of the generational divide, I think it's hard sometimes to be transparent about finances and families, because I don't know, like some of these people subscribe to this older belief of like, we don't talk about this shit.
Mm-hmm. They must have had separate bank accounts.
I don't, it's very confusing to me, and not to derail on this and how we deal with talking about our finances, but it really jarred me. I was like, she's told two of her best friends and everyone who reads The Guardian, but not her husband. Okay.
You know, that's not for me to judge. That's for her to figure out.
It's not for us to judge. I'm rooting for your marriage, Nancy. And I, you know, I don't know. Maybe her husband's an asshole, though. Maybe they're separated. We can't know. Okay. She describes herself. She says, I'm a very intelligent, sensible, caring person. So it's hard to say why I did what I did. But the fact is that if it can happen to me, it could happen to anyone. Nancy's like, I'm a regular gal.
Well, she's this really sticking to it. Yeah, she's right. Yeah, that's yeah. okay. She's regular.
Yeah, listen, I'm not mad at her. I'm not mad at you, Nancy. Eventually, and this is great, we love to see it, Nancy went to see a health worker about a different issue. So she went about something completely unrelated to her gambling. And I'm like, I love you out here seeking therapy, Nancy. And she broke down and she truly said, all it took was the counselor to ask her, what do you do for fun?
Oh.
And it brought it home to her, like, where had I gone? Why was I doing these things? Mm-hmm. And so then she went to an NHS counselor and to game care and is now in recovery. We love to see it,
Thank
sweet Nancy.
God, Nance.
I love her out here, like, seeking this help for other. Maybe she was seeking a counselor about her marriage where she can't tell her husband the truth. We don't know.
Well, okay? You peel it back just one layer and find that the real issue is this.
I mean, we can't know. But we get some kind of insight from some other specialists in this article. And I found this stuff interesting and very gendered, but I do think
I'm ready for it. It's all right.
I don't think I had really thought about this prior to digging in and doing the research. And then as soon as I was reading it, I was like, yes, well, of course it is. But just truly how like male dominated mm-hmm. gambling really has traditionally been.
Well, and in the way that drinking and smoking is also traditionally exactly. a male thing, and women kind of, it was like brave
yeah,
lesbians or
now.
Like rough, like slutty women.
Loose
would
women.
Be.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And so it's like, yeah, women go to bars now. Women also gamble now. There, and so.
And we wear pants.
Well, there's more like we do wear them pants, but there is like more shame, I think, probably wrapped up around that because like gambling is probably like a little quote unquote like unladylike or, you know, whatever. Ian Semmel leads Break Even, a charity supporting gambling addicts in the UK. I'd just like to point out that I like it being called Break Even.
I was
going like
to say
name.
Just a genius title. Yeah.
Great name. Great name. He believes that the latest figures hide the true number of female problem gamblers.
I bet they do.
Because so few reach out for help. Mm. Says there's a stigma for women gamblers. Society has a very clear, you know, gender role for women and expectations that they'll be the caregivers. Mm-hmm. And to breach this risks judgment, exposure, shame, guilt. Liz Carter, who's a therapist specializing in gambling addiction in women, and I'm like, okay, Liz, get
really
it to the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She says the way women gamble is different to men, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. So at Gamblers Anonymous meetings, men were telling women they weren't proper gamblers because they weren't doing it for the rush and the winnings. And I was like, okay, well.
You can be addicted to many feelings.
It also, if I hear one more man like tell a woman she's not even fucking up her life the wrong right way, you know,
wow.
like what?
You okay, are a terrible alcoholic.
Get out of here. Like you're not drinking correctly in yep. excess. Okay. Wow. So instead, Liz tells us that women gamble to escape, soothe, reduce stress and distract themselves. I was like, okay.
Okay.
For women, gambling soothes them and numbs pain, says Dr. Henrietta Bowden-Jones, founder and director of the National Problem Gambling Clinic.
Mm.
Okay. Sometimes, she says, they begin gambling as a result of bereavement or because they're a carer for someone they love, and it's an overwhelming responsibility for them.
Oh.
Many women won't seek help because they're afraid of having their children taken away. Many have embezzled or stolen money and fear prison if they're discovered, she adds.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, women begin gambling later in life than men, which I also thought was interesting. But their problems develop more quickly, which experts believe may be because they tend to choose quick, high-stakes games such as online slots and bingo.
Mm.
Shout out to the ladies playing bingo in those church basements. That's the most approved time-old, like, women gambling is, like, the church congregation and the bingo.
And I remember being floored by that when I found out that they were playing for money as a child. I was, like, really, really taken aback.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were like, wait, this is for the Lord? I thought this was Jesus bingo.
And just like the elderly ladies.
No, I got a hot streak. I'm playing six cards right now.
100%. And at the senior center where my grandma worked, there was a bingo day and just the whole senior center would fill with smoke. It was ridiculous.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. It was the 90s.
Somebody's oxygen tank needed to be turned down. Okay. So switching to another gal in this article who I think this will harken to some of the stuff you mentioned. So interesting in terms of your solitaire little freebies.
Oh, yeah.
Stay tuned. So Carrie Nichols, she's 37. She had never gambled before, but she and her partner started making £1 online bets on the football games they love to watch together. That's cute, you know, social gambling vibes. And it was a way to just, you know, make the games more interesting, fun. She and her
boo, I love to put a little stakes on stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I bet you a pound, a quid. Okay. So then the site they used gave her £200 of free bets.
Uh-oh.
Except, of course, those bets turned out not to be free. They came with some financial strings, as they do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun at first, but then my partner went back to university, and I was stuck and not in a great job and not in a great new flat because, you know, my partner was at uni. I felt I needed to earn more money for us, and gambling seemed like a good way to do that.
Ooh.
Oh, no, Carrie. Oh, no, Carrie. Within 6 months of making her first £1 bet, Carrie was gambling daily.
Mm.
It had stopped being fun by then. I was chasing my losses. It had become an emotional thing. I was addicted.
Oh.
Carrie was betting increasing sums of money and suddenly found herself in serious debt. Having gone through counseling, I now know I was using gambling to escape my other problems.
Mm-hmm.
I felt neglected and gambling replaced what I was missing. I could invest my time in it and distract myself from my thoughts and difficulties. And I was like, okay, I see you.
Yeah.
I see you, Carrie. But the addiction lasted 5 years and cost her £50,000. And was, she says, literally a 24-hour thing. She was setting her phone to wake her up at night with notifications of matches that were being played.
Oh, my God.
And she'd bet on them. Her partner would be sleeping right next to her, not even knowing this was going on. And she said she didn't even know how she still had a job because she used to get up from her desk constantly and take the phone outside and gamble.
What? Okay.
She also said, like, sometimes I was, like, gambling on my phone while sitting opposite my dad in a restaurant.
Interesting.
It made me feel very lonely. I was living a completely separate, secret scorpion life that completely obsessed me. And it seemed no one cared enough to even notice. Ooh, that was like a knife in the heart. When you're like, I got this problem. And no one's even invested enough in my life to realize this is going on. That made her feel even more alone. She says, I'm mostly ashamed of the lies I told everyone.
Yeah,
I'm
I mean, if you're amazing at hiding it, you can't be like that mad at people for not noticing. But I feel her on the loneliness of that.
Well, that's the thing. And she says, you know, I'm a very honest person. And it was scary that I could lie so well. They just rolled off my tongue.
Sliding out.
Probably starting to feeling like she doesn't, you know, totally feel that acquainted with herself. Then Carrie, you know, she really struggled. And, you know, at some point she like stopped for, you know, just 6 weeks. And she thought, you know, if she admitted it, it would get better. Her dad paid off like some of her debt. but, or I guess it was like, you know, all the debt at the time, it was like 25,000 pounds, which I'm like, God bless. But because she hadn't addressed any of the underlying issues, him clearing her debt just like meant she could start again. And in no time, she had basically doubled it.
Yep.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. She was in some very dark mental places and kind of had a come to Jesus moment. And when she did, you know, and she's like, I really need to, like, you know, get real help for this, right? She contacted GameCare and the gambling addiction charity Gordon Moody Association and arranged a weekly remote counseling by video link. Listen, people, you can do it in these quarantine times. You can. Right. And she attended Gamblers Anonymous meetings, and she said she's never gambled since. Hmm. I've handed my credit cards to my mom, got a phone with no internet access, and stopped watching sports. Those are hard to find. Yeah. The most important thing was to start talking to people about it. I've become very open and reflective. I no longer bottle things up. Carrie wants to urge other women gamblers to ask for help. To any gamblers out there, I'd say they should talk to someone and ask for help, because help is available and it really does work. Mm. Okay.
Mm.
A couple ladies and some interesting thoughts about, I feel like, gambling in ways we haven't heard. I thought it was interesting, this not like I'm not chasing the rush, but like escapism of gambling.
Yes.
Which feels very COVID-y to me, and actually in a lot of ways made it seem more similar to drug addiction than I had, I don't know, previously heard it spelled out, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I think for me too. And it made me wonder if, because I know that some people experience drug addiction in a more, in a way that's more similar to what, how the men were describing the gambling addiction with,
sure, the like, rush,
the weight and the pressure build and the rush. But that doesn't mean that both aren't like totally valid. But then it also makes me think about just like playing any video games, like what that feels like. And it is a similar kind of like numbing out, like relaxing into, completely forgetting your surroundings. And yeah, I feel that way. Like when I used to play The Sims.
Oh, sure.
Or honestly, like even sometimes like if I'm playing a little solitaire for an imaginary dollar, that kind of feeling of playing The Sims does wash over me.
Okay, I see you. I think one of the interesting things about this, and we're going to get into some more video game stuff because that I truly find fascinating. I got another person to tell you about. But I want to just hit some general stuff about gambling from our favorite source, Wikipedia.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is one of the most kind of standout things I want to point out. But basically, they refer to it, the main page, called problem gambling, which to me sounds like kind of a healthy thing, but it is like the technical term.
Mm-hmm. These differences.
Right. So problem gambling is an urge to gamble continuously despite negative consequences or a desire to stop. So you want to stop, but like you're still doing it.
Yeah.
Right. Problem gambling is often, and this is what I found so interesting, it's often defined by whether harm is experienced by the gambler or others rather than by the gambler's behavior.
Oh.
Isn't that interesting?
Whoa. Okay.
Because I guess you could think about, you know, okay, people who gamble professionally, like these professional poker players or whatever, who exist, who are like doing the tournaments, who are, you know, I actually worked retail for a period of time with a woman who was, I think, dating, but ultimately like engaged to and married a guy who like played poker professionally. Like that's what he did.
That is a fascinating life. We have a
fascinating. I would love to learn more about it. I think it's super interesting. Mm-hmm. Right. But the thing there that like kind of, I feel like this makes that distinction is like, okay, those people are probably gambling more or just as much as the people who are having problems with gambling, right?
100%.
But the issue is like whether harm is being experienced. And not to say that there aren't people who are professional gamblers who like have problems, because I'm sure, but
they're just like so much luckier.
Well, I
like if you're good at gambling, it's less problematic.
Stop it. I can't. No, but I thought that was interesting because, I mean, professional poker players, too, it's like it's not all their money. You know what I mean?
Oh, I'm that's sure a really like good point, too.
And I'm sure, you know, when you're it's like people like on any sports team. I think we don't credit, you know, the sponsorships or things happening for people who are like poker players or like professional bowlers or like whatever, you know? And also you think about any kind of pro athlete. I mean, like people bonus and stuff based on like how far they go and, you know, season or all sorts of things, right? But I just thought that was interesting that I was like, it's not necessarily that you're gambling. It's that if your gambling is involving harm.
Yes.
It's the result.
It's fucking up your life.
Yeah. So severe problem gambling may be diagnosed as clinical pathological gambling if the gambler meets certain criteria. Pathological gambling is a common disorder that is associated with both social and family costs. To no shock there. And the DSM-5, because we love to give you the background there, has reclassified the condition as an addictive disorder, with sufferers exhibiting many similarities to those who have substance addictions. So the term gambling addiction has long been used in the recovery movement. And pathological gambling was long considered by the American Psychiatric Association to be an impulse control disorder rather than an addiction, which was interesting. So we've walked that back and we are saying that it is an addictive disorder. But previously, folks were saying it was an impulse control disorder, which
and
are
that's
two really
a
different
Venn
things.
Diagram. But yeah, you need
sure.
And the way that, again, like the men in the study were expressing the or the men were saying like the women had gambling addictions.
You're
in the
not
wrong
gambling
way.
In a bad habit way, the right bad habit way. Yes.
Exactly. I feel like maybe they're describing a little bit more of like an impulse situation. But I do think it's a Venn diagram.
Yeah, that adrenaline, you know, chase.
Because drug
kind
use
of thing.
Is like that too. It's kind of both sometimes.
Sure, totally, absolutely. However, data suggest a closer relationship between pathological gambling and substance use disorders than exists between PG and obsessive compulsive disorder, largely because the behaviors in problem gambling and most primary substance use disorders, i.e., you know, those not resulting from a desire to self-medicate for another condition such as depression, right? So those are different. But these disorders seek to activate the brain's reward mechanisms, while the behaviors characterizing obsessive-compulsive disorders are prompted by overactive and misplaced signals from the brain's fear mechanisms.
Okay.
That makes sense?
So we're basically talking kind of like dopamine hit versus like soothing. Okay.
And I think this is where some of this is interesting though, because in the article we read, this kind of clinical feedback was that it seemed like some, they were saying maybe more of the women were using it as the soothing kind of mechanism. And I guess my takeaways from, you know, some of the clinical stuff riding along with what the Psychiatric Association and the DSM are saying are just that like maybe like people can do it for, you know, different reasons, like anything.
It can be a problem in both situations. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it can be, you know, considered problem gambling because to this point, you know, if you're self-medicating with drugs or alcohol because you have depression versus you're not dealing with depression, but you're just drinking in excess or, you know, addicted to drugs, both of those things would make you a drug addict or an alcoholic, right? Like you would be qualified as both regardless of your intention there.
Correct.
So I think that that's, you know, an interesting way to, play it out, that you can be a gambling addict for different motivations.
100%. And in all these situations, what's happening is like the gambling or like whatever like drug of choice is making the rest of the person's life unmanageable.
100%. And truly, I guess, you know, things we also will associate with like problems with alcohol, etc., is that problem gambling is an addictive behavior with a high like correlation to alcohol problems. You know, a common feature shared by people.
Drink and gamble at the same time.
I mean, in Vegas, they're put together intentionally. You know,
yeah,
yeah. So people who a common you know feature shared by people who suffer from gambling addiction is this impulsivity. So there you go. To throw in, and I want to get to some of this kind of video game juju here, because I thought this was super interesting and thought-provoking and fueled some of my social dilemma continued fears of, like, get away from computers.
I have.
God bless. I mean, listen, you never were, like, up in it, you know?
Exactly. That's the real key.
Guys, Jamie doesn't touch our Instagram. You're always talking to me. Anyway, so this was keeping it British for you, on BBC News. This is an article published late in October of 2019, right? And it was called How My Son Went From Gamer to Compulsive Gambler.
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay, and so this is some shit that I was like, this hits. Mm-hmm. It really hits.
Slaps.
So, yeah.
I'm so sorry.
It doesn't slap because that means something entirely different. And nothing about this guy's story slaps, okay? But it does hit hard and close to home.
Yeah.
I thought you were a millennial. Okay, so the NHS has opened its first clinic for young people addicted to gaming and gambling. A year after a gambling commission report found that 55,000 11 to 16-year-olds in the UK were problem gamblers.
That is a shitload of children. I'm so sorry. Uh-huh. Like, we did like some light gambling as teens that involved like poker in a friend's basement and you and I like owing each other $5 about Connect Four. Uh-huh.
Just
oh my God,
Connect
that's
Four.
Why you texted me that picture of Connect Four.
That's why I sent you the Connect Four meme earlier this week. Now Jamie's getting it in. And if anyone wants to know about the meme, it was just a shot from Queen's Gambit, which I haven't watched, where there would have been a chessboard, but she was like really dramatically playing Connect Four.
I loved it. Thank you. Yes.
You didn't respond to the text.
Well, it was, I saw it very late last night, and the other one was more important.
What was, oh yeah, the other one.
The monolith. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, y'all, I'd be sending some shit. I'd be sending them screen grabs. Okay, so for some, the path to gambling begins with playing online games. As the BBC's Becky Milligan heard from the father of one young man, now getting help for his addiction. Mm. So, dad, Steve, okay? Sure. Steve is like, not in a million years did I think gaming would lead to compulsive gambling. He agreed to talk about his son's gambling addiction. He seemed nervous, all the things. They paint a little picture for you, but I'm going to let Steve live and not paint an anxiety-ridden picture for you about him talking to a reporter because it's probably not as bad as they sensationalized it to be.
Cool.
Anyway, his son is now in his early 20s and is in recovery and doing well. But they're taking it one day at a time, according to Steve. Mm. So he said, we've had a terrible 3 years. We wouldn't want anyone to go through what we've gone through. When we first discovered our son had the compulsive gambling disorder, we didn't know what to do.
I wouldn't know.
Steve, I mean, yeah, I don't know what I would do if I were, you know, we're Nancy's husband parents. Or Steve, you know. Mm-hmm. So Steve tells our sweet reporter here how one night his son lost his weekly wage in a matter of minutes.
Oh.
Distraught, he appealed to his parents for help. And they maybe what many other parents potentially would do. They paid off his debt, hoping it would be the end of it. But it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I tell Steve that I've spoken with other parents whose children have developed gambling disorders. And they also paid off the debts at first, which we saw, you know, with our girl Carrie.
Nance?
And the Nancy and Carrie, but I believe Carrie, her dad, was the first one to dig her out a little bit in that narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Steve says that he thought, you know, it was just a little glitch, like this is what kids do. We thought it was like kind of a one-time thing initially. He and his wife had known for some time that their son enjoyed having the odd bet, but like lots of their friends enjoyed a flutter, and it didn't seem to be out of the ordinary.
Mm.
A year later, though, Steve was shocked to find out his son was gambling with other people's money.
Uh-oh.
And losing a large amounts.
Mm.
It was online roulette. That was his downfall. So Steve realized there was a serious problem when this information came to light, and he and his wife didn't know what to do. How would you know?
Mm-mm.
And this is tough, and this is how shit affects other people, but they began to isolate themselves and avoid going out or seeing friends because they were worried what people would say.
Aww.
So they were pretty helpless. They didn't know which way to turn.
It's
and
a
they
huge
spent
family
months,
secret now.
Right. And they spent months, you know, trying to find the answers and doing their own research, a very shame-filled kind of thing. They find out about GameAnon, and Steve and his wife went to a GameAnon meeting for families. And then earlier this year, his son also began to get help. So Steve has had several months to do a lot of research, and he believes his son's addiction was sparked when he was 12 or 13 and obsessed with playing online games, particularly football games. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He would play, and for everyone to please imagine, though, all of this is, you know, soccer. It's not American football because everything I've been reading you is British. And I just want to make sure that this whole time you've been picturing black and white balls being kicked.
Okay. I've been picturing American football. So well, thank you.
You're welcome. Bringing it back to the BBC and The Guardian. Okay. So he would play for hours and hours in his bedroom and, you know, would do it with his friends. They were all into it. And Steve didn't really understand what the games were about, let alone the new technology the games use. And it's like, hi, this is every kid who's played a video game. Your parents not like super like up informed like about the video game, you know, it's like because it's not their thing.
No. And then your grandma comes into the room and says, are you doing things that would make Jesus proud? And you look at her confused and say, it's The Sims. And then that's the end of it.
So just speaking from personal experience,
that was a true story. Yes.
Are you doing things that would make Jesus proud? And you said, this is The Sims.
Yep. Well, I'm like, I don't know what she, like, my grandma thought I was, like, looking at porn or something. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you can do some wild shit on The Sims if you got the right code.
Listen, you can. Delete that bed and the blur. Anyway.
You know what? Light that clown painting on fire. Well, put him in the pool.
You can really anyway. Fuck some shit up.
Yeah, I don't know if Jesus would be proud.
I don't know either.
We can't. So the son was at least occupied. Listen, parents can be lazy. This is like, you. Everybody wants an easy life, a quiet life, you know.
A the quiet
kids
team.
Are upstairs playing upstairs. Like, what's the harm in that?
Mm-hmm.
So thought Steve. So Steve now thinks that the football games promoted habits, including spending hours online, that developed into gambling. And I was like, okay. And I have a lot of interesting feelings on video games, and I don't want to totally derail on that, right? But there was an episode of our show early on where we were talking about, I think honestly it might have been season one, if not it was season two, but we were talking about, you know, friendships and how things shift. It could have been Seasons of Friendship, I'm not sure, but I read this article in the Boston Globe where it talked about, you know, how men oftentimes center friendships around activities, whereas women will, you know, because traditionally it's been like child rearing and just like gossip or whatever. It's like, you see, you know, the gals just out at brunch living their life, but guys have to like play golf or like, you know, like you have to be doing some activity. And as folks, you know, get married, have families, they don't have this time for, you know, these activities. And so they lose their friends. And that article made me a real big proponent of being like, let your husband play the fucking video games. It's the only time like he talks to his friends. And I have a lot of gals in my life who are partnered with men who like truly like have like the real talks like when they're playing their remote video games. If people are like,
I also
dudes
know
talking about their kids and like their marriages and like work, but like they wouldn't just get on the phone and call each other for a couple hours, you know, they have to do it while they're, you know, building a fort or shooting someone.
Correct.
So I really promote it. But this made me skeptical because hearing just the habit of spending like hours online promoted in children, innately hearing that, I go, ooh, yeah, that does seem not like the number one thing you want your kid to be doing. I don't know. Or a person to be doing.
No. And if for no other reason that it kind of primes you to repeatedly, and I felt this way again, playing The Sims as a child where you lose.
I love how much The Sims is coming up. I value this content. Go on.
You lose.
Make Jesus
track
proud.
Of time. You suddenly like you're building your house and making your person. And then suddenly like it's like 7 or 8 hours later. And you're like, how did that even happen? And
well, and you think about the iPhone, there is a reason that when you're like in the interface of games, it hides the clock on your phone. Mm-hmm. It's like the same reason there aren't clocks inside casinos
or Windows. Yes.
Yeah.
That's
fucked up. It's disturbing. Right. So Steve's son, and this is where we get into some more of that like in-app purchasing kind of thing.
For sure.
We thought this was crucial. So Steve's son was encouraged to pay for extra products such as, quote, ultimate team packs. Listen to this. So in these ultimate team packs and this, you know, British football, soccer, if you will, the identities of the players in the packs would be revealed only once you had, like, bought the package, which Steve says introduced his son to the thrill of gambling, the game of chance and risk, including the chance to acquire, like, a star player who would make you unbeatable, but you don't know if you're getting that or not. You're just giving the money over.
It's like a pack of Pokemon cards.
Yes. So, Steve thinks the difference between online gaming and gambling is very subtle, and that those children who excessively game online, like his son, are at risk of becoming compulsive gamblers later in life.
It's candy cigarettes.
Well, it doesn't matter, he says, whether the game involves winning or losing real money. Enter, who we saw in the previous Guardian article, Dr. Harrietta Bowen Jones, the psychiatrist at the new NHS Treatment Center,
says
there's no link between gaming-related activities that may be toxic for young people and gambling. The link has been yet to be established, but it's a big controversial conversation currently.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, maybe the data isn't there in, like, a tested way, but we're all seeing these through lines.
So she says, I believe so little is known in this country, being Britain, about both these behavioral addictions in children that we need to hear it on the ground. We need to understand what these people are doing, then work with the policymakers, politicians, and public health professionals to change the environment they live in. Do with that what you will. It's, you know, a stance politically and governmentally on the kind of oversight. But I think there's a lot of merit here to, like, we don't know. We don't know how this stuff is playing out for kids. And I think that's true about so many things. And it's for every generation. There's always, like, the generation that's, like, the first to, you know, do X, Y, and Z. You know,
we are the first generation to have,
like, constantly computers in their homes. There was the MTV, like, generation for sure. Like, so all of this, and it's like, well, how does that affect people? So there have been a very, you know, few tough years for Steve and his family. He recently left his job, Steve did, and set up a charity to help other people in similar situations. But it's complicated. Steve says that parents need to know what their children are doing online. They need to become experts in order to protect them. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. He says, do the research, put the barriers in place, take control of the device, set up family time, screen the child's activity so that you are in control of what's going on. And most importantly,
this is hard for me. Go on. I have, like, some feelings welling up.
We'll get there. Okay. And most importantly, do not have any of your credit cards, debit cards linked to the account.
Well, that's there a given.
Sure. There are horror stories where children are spending excessive amounts of money on in-game purchases. Many of these games promote themselves as free games, but the loot boxes in the games are not. Like the ultimate team packs that Steve's son used to buy, loot boxes may contain virtual items such as weapons or shields that help a player win, and the gamers don't know what's in them until they've bought them. So what do you think about all of this monitoring part? What are your feels?
The monitoring I really don't love. I'll tell you, I'm here for the game packs, though. Like, I want more of that sprinkled throughout my life, as though I'm getting a grab bag at a carnival when I was a child.
You're pro game packs.
Cause I just like the idea of game packs. I don't know. I guess that's like how FabFitFun ends up being a company that works, is like, it's essentially a game pack that gets sent to you monthly. You're buying yourself gifts. Anyway, how do I feel about the censorship stuff? Not great. I kind of feel like you're creating a situation where once that kid leaves the house, like, they just fucking go wild. I kind of feel like you have to, maybe there's a way to, like, trust in the kid, but, like, also have, like, more transparent conversations with them, and, like, also just don't have in-app purchasing available for anything.
Yeah, I think the in-app purchasing and these game packs that you're apparently a proponent for seem like a not a good thing to have in children's games.
Definitely not. I feel like that is maybe something that there will be legislation about in a few years. But, like, if it's, like, marketed toward children, like, you really shouldn't be able to just, like, tear through in-app purchases, because even small children could make mistakes. But no, I just think that the mistrust creates, like, an opportunity for the child to then, like, want to game harder, or, like, then have, like, a secret phone or like iPod that connects to the internet that they're playing on that you don't know about. And I don't know. I just don't ever think that like over surveillance and like authoritarian restriction like gets you very far.
I agree. And I think like we talk about things we faced as like kiddos. We're talking about this and that generation. We were very much like the stranger danger of the internet generation of people mm-hmm. being like, don't talk to people you don't know in these chat rooms. And like, for sure, I was talking to people I didn't know in chat rooms.
We all were.
The thing, everyone was. But I think the thing that you, and also like, I mean, listen, one of my best girls and her husband met on Tumblr. So do with the world what you will.
It happens.
But you know what? It happens. And I have plenty of friends, like internet friends, if you will, through the gram and different things, you know, I'm affiliated with or interested in. We have podcast buddies, you know?
We do.
And so, and that is a true delight. But I feel like we were trained, we were, you know, the conversation when we were younger is like, don't talk to anyone on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really about giving people the tools, because what you should, like the conversation should have been, is like, don't tell people on the internet, like your address, like where you go to yep. school, your full name, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so with this gambling juju, I'm with you that I'm like, I feel like, wow, there's like, you know, quote unquote, some gateway drugs in some video games that I hadn't really thought about their correlation to gambling and kind of those habits from a young age in a way that I did find a little jarring. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the thing is to like stalk your children. And listen, every generation, the younger kids, there's going to be some new technology that the older set doesn't all the way understand as quickly as the younger kids because it's not for them. Mm-hmm. And that's always going to be a thing. And I think you just have to equip people with the tools to be smart. And yeah, also remove the credit cards. That's like a given.
That's the bit, like, I don't care about your ease of purchase. Like, I don't know. It feels like a bad idea to have credit card payment activated on a child's device.
I agree. How do you feel about video games being like a gateway potentially to some gambling stuff?
I think I get it, but I also think that people are really quick to like blame video games for a lot of things.
Like violence.
Like violence, sexism, vandalism, gambling. In the same way that like it reminds me kind of like when Ted Bundy tried to blame his crimes on pornography.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that people try and blame things on video games and porn. Yeah, that's fair.
So it's kind of just like, I mean, you're in control of you, like you're deciding what you consume. And if you choose to consume exclusively video games for 12 hours a day, like most mm-hmm. days, then yeah, like you're setting yourself up for a life where you have a dopamine reward system that's like attached to your phone or like gameplay in some way. And like you're not super aware of your surroundings probably because you're like in a game for so long. And so I don't think it's so much about like the game as it is just like excess of anything. And like I think it's gateway in that like maybe that numbing feeling starts to happen. And like how I got used to being like numbed out to The Sims for 5 to 8 hours when I was a preteen.
You loved The Sims. I love that.
It was really fun. But then I would feel like weird and depressed after, like almost like when you're hungover.
Oh.
And because I would feel like so like almost like going out into like bright sunlight, like coming back into my life after playing a bout of the game. And so I think that maybe people could be setting themselves up for that kind of numbing behavior. But you can literally do that with anything. Like people do it with food. Like people do it with exercise, like shopping. You can do anything that is either relaxing or gives you like a dopamine boost to excess. And I don't think it's the fault of that thing. It's just like maybe you have to be careful with that.
That's interesting. I feel like, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot to be said about like needing the tools to navigate these things effectively. And I would say, I would argue for most, you know, at least Americans in this trash country where we're handling the pandemic terribly, this is a time that I feel like most people's screen time is up. Like if your resolution this year included to like spend less time on your phone, like LOL, okay? Like I feel like most of us are on our devices a little bit more, especially if we live alone, etc. I'm really trying to, I feel like in recent weeks, clock that in myself and mm-hmm. like be less on screens, because even though I can't like really go anywhere, I'm like, there is some stuff I feel like I would be more glad that I did than, you know, X, Y, and Z amount of time on whatever platform. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to not be on them at all, but I'm on them less.
Sure. Okay?
And I think that, I don't know, that's certainly something to noodle through. And I think it painted a clear picture to me how gambling, and in a lot of ways I could think about like the dopamine hits and stuff that you're bringing up, similar to social media, like we kind of mm-hmm. talked about previously, the same kind of things. But it did paint, I think, honestly, a picture to me that made me feel like perhaps like gambling is one of the easiest addictions to like fall victim to.
Oh, yeah. I think that it really could be, because you don't have to. It's so instantly both like the dopamine and the numbing agent if you want it. And it can mm-hmm. be like a party drug or like a solo drug, if you will. It's so
right. I
it's
feel
so
like it's
flexible.
Easier.
Yeah.
I feel like it's easier to get a hold of, you know, than substances.
It's
or
legal on your
sex.
Phone. Yeah.
Right.
You just download something. Wow. Yeah.
And the barriers to entry are so low.
And like that woman doing it while she's at work, like you could hop on an app, like if mm-hmm. you have 2 free minutes, like while you're going to the bathroom, you can lose $100, you know?
Exactly. And here's the thing, with so many people, you know, working remotely now, I felt like I don't know, it made me more like, I don't want to say afraid, that's not the word I want to use, but I just feel like looking into this, I became more cognizant of how quick and easy and accessible falling into a gambling issue is now today more than ever because of the internet and because of, you know, gambling apps and that kind of thing.
And it really, like, I never would have done that before. Like, I enjoy the like a social poker game amongst people.
Sure.
But like pre-pandemic, I don't know that I would have been playing like solitaire for fake money and sometimes real money on my phone.
Fair, right? Like,
I don't think I would have done that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I felt like this was oddly like gambling feels like highly relevant right now, especially with the conversations I feel like a lot of us are having about social media and our phones, feeling like we've ratcheted up our screen time this year and how easy it is to fall into something. And just from like a, you know, financial, I don't know, responsibility or like mindfulness standpoint, even if you're not gambling, all these little in-app purchases, you know, add up.
That'll add up for sure. Yeah.
For sure it will. So a lot of factors can, you know, cater to gambling addiction in general. And according to, you know, many of the psychological sources we've referenced, obviously there are mental health disorders, you know, the presence of other substance abuse, right? Personality disorders, emotional states. Interestingly, in terms of age and sex, we've talked about how there's a rise in gambling with women and still more common in men, but it's usually found in like the youth and middle-aged folks.
Interesting. Yeah, I know some middle-aged gamblers for sure. I won't name any names.
Well, just name people, you know, bleep them out.
No, I will not. I will not today.
Not those edits. Okay. But yeah, I thought there was some criteria in here that was interesting. And I feel like if anything, all of us, because of the nature of the internet, are a little bit more susceptible than ever. And I am not here to offer, you know, cures or solutions. I do think like the overarching theme of the stories we talked about and of like any addiction or, you know, substance abuse or gambling or whatever it may be, you know, seeking help is always a good thing. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like in some ways, not that I had like no compassion for it, but I think I didn't previously feel like gambling was like a really easy thing to fall into the same way I felt like, you know, drugs or alcohol. Mm-hmm.
Well, because similar to like when people talk about like shopping addictions or any kind of like behavioral addiction that's not a substance, I think
like sex addiction.
Yes, yes. Sometimes it's hard to take those seriously because there's
I think so. I think there's a stigma of like, well, if you're putting a drug or alcohol into your body, you know you're chemically altering it. But I think it's hard for people to see that when you're not like when you're just like shopping or
yes,
gambling
a compulsive
or
behavior.
Having sex.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's like, I think also people say like, well, you don't experience like withdrawal from gambling like the way you'd experience like withdrawal from heroin. And that may be true, but also like I'm not a gambling addict. And so like I don't know what it's like to like want to gamble and like shake and cry on your floor like whichever woman we were talking about because you know yeah. that you have to gamble. Like that sounds pretty physical to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's certainly mental. Like, and I don't know
all encompassing
stack those
really.
Things up. Like one was worse than the other.
But I do think that's why it's harder to talk about and maybe like not given the compassion that maybe
it's
like
tangible
something that someone sees as a physiological addiction, I think gets treated a little more gently.
Yeah.
And gambling addicts like often are like fucking people over for money because like it's so desperate.
You do burn some bridges. Yeah. I mean, same is true of any addiction
it
though
is.
Too. If you need the funds to, you know,
addictions
fuel your
are
habit.
Expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, gambling probably the most expensive of all addictions.
It's exclusively financial. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So whew, what a wild ride, but I'm glad we looked into it because it did give me some greater insight and compassion. And I hope maybe all of us a little bit more mindfulness about some of the ways that, you know, maybe our brain is experiencing gambling feelings when we didn't realize we were gambling.
We're laying those neurological roads. Yep.
We are. We are. Well, in true Why Are You Like This fashion, I think it's time to pivot to a verbal game. So cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
So, I'd like to pose a would you rather in kind of a gambling betting fashion. Mm-hmm. And no insensitivity meant here. We're taking it to some outlandish places of things that you could bet on, right?
Mm-hmm. You can bet on anything, though.
You can bet on anything if you want. I'm sure one of us still owes the other one some money over some Connect Four and Figure
I'm
Eight.
I'm sure we do.
For another time. I mean, that's really a thing, too, which we didn't touch on too much, but there's something kids like hit an age in grade school where mm-hmm. they like want to bet like a dollar on everything. And I don't know what that's about. It's an interesting part of childhood development.
It
I have
is.
Questions.
Yeah. We'll revisit that sometime. Yeah.
We'll revisit that. Those childlike impulses. It doesn't surprise me about the 11 to 16 year olds. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've got a would you rather for you.
Ready?
Okay. Every morning you are either going to be placing bets on the arrival of coworkers to the office every day. You're going to be aggressively announcing like when people get there and when people don't. And you're going to be like, oh, Jan, if you had beat Kevin, that would have been $50 for me. You're going to be like real rowdy about that with all mm-hmm. of your colleagues. Okay. Mm-hmm. The alternative is you're going to be placing bets on the arrival of employees to an office every day that you don't work in. You're going to gain Ooh. A reputation for being one of those folks that's just like kind of outside a building on a loudspeaker making weird public claims. But you're just going to be yelling about when employees arrive to work because you're betting on it.
Well, so in both situations, like it seems that it's pretty much like fully taking over my life. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think in one situation I have a job and in one situation I don't.
Well reasoned. Keep going. Okay.
But with putting that aside, I think it would be really a fun chapter to be a person on a megaphone outside of a building, kind of a local color figure. And also
a local color.
Some of the magic is taken out of it if it's the office where I work. I feel like I don't want to be distracted by having to start work. I'd like to really be able to focus on my announcements and my bets. So I choose.
So, my announcements and my bets. Wait, here's the thing. I feel like the nuance that you're missing too is if you're doing it in your own office, like when people are showing up late and you're loudly calling them out for it, the aggression that probably must result. Whereas like if you're doing it to like strangers, at least you don't have to work with these people that you're like, Susan is 35 minutes late today. It cost me $10.
And you know, the employees at the building of strangers where I'm doing this would probably think that corporate hired me to keep them all on their toes.
Oh, they might. They would be. There'd be like a.
I might start that rumor so that no one kicks me off the property.
Okay, that you'd be like, I'm hired. I work here.
I'd make a badge.
They pay me to watch your cars enter the garage. I know everyone's license plate.
This reminds me of that woman that I worked with at Don Pablo's, who like sort of worked there, but was like always just like telling me I had the wrong color jeans on and that I was late. And she was always posted up at the tortilla maker, like not really doing anything. Just watching people come in. She did work there, but she only worked when she wanted. And her position was just to make tortillas, which was something that all the servers shared as a duty when she wasn't there. Like no other Don Pablo's has a tortilla maker. It's just like one step of side work for servers.
I mean,
she was a lot.
Wow.
Anyway,
what a journey.
Her aside, would you do the same thing?
I choose that because I don't want the office tension of
social
like
social ease. Yeah.
Yeah. Like making, you know, upsetting my colleagues about yelling about when they're late or not. And also I'm going to own it. I am usually I would have to get to work earlier than other people to make this happen. And that is not my strong suit. I'm not going to feign being timely to the first thing I have to do in the morning. Absolutely not. I'm usually like very punctual for like social plans, unless that social plan is like the first thing I'm doing of the day. I'm late to everything that's the first thing of the day.
It's tough, I will say, to get into that first thing.
But like if we have plans after work, I'm 20 minutes early. But like if I'm supposed to be somewhere first thing in the morning, no fucking way. I'll never be on time. I have a hard time getting out of bed. Anyway.
That's okay. Late for your morning routine of yourself. Anyway.
I'm going to have to work on it, but I'm going to be like in the car with a coffee yelling with a loudspeaker. I won't even get out of my car. I'll have like a PA system mounted on top.
Oh, this is fun. I'll wear a disguise. You know what would be even better is a go-kart. I don't know. That would give you some kind of a security vibe.
Oh, I'm doing this in Florida. Oh my God. Can you imagine? Oh, I'm
that actually sounds really fun.
I'll have a uniform. What if I was, then one day I'll like show up on a bicycle. And then when people start heckling me about where my golf cart, I'll say, my golf cart's in the shop.
Yep.
But I'll be like on a cruiser. What if I'll be on a tandem bike? I'll make someone ride it with me one day. I'll be like, I couldn't get the cart. Yeah. Okay. I like this.
That sounds great. Okay. I have a scenario for you as well.
Okay. Hit me with it.
So again, these are things that you will spend. We're going to say like the bulk of your time, like 40 plus hours per week, like engaged in.
This is my job, man. Shit.
And this is like how you think you make your money. Cause this particular betting is taking over your life. Would you rather have
I'm scared.
Which senators in the upcoming or ongoing times will have sex scandals?
Oh,
you know, just play, you know, placing bets on various individuals.
There are a lot of people to bet on. Okay.
Yeah. And the, you know, scoring system could be kind of roulette style anyway. Or would you rather exclusively place bets on where new Olive Gardens will open?
But is the Olive Garden opening new locations?
It is indeed. Probably not during the pandemic, but like 2019 pre-pandemic. Yes.
Okay, I choose the Olive Garden, and let me tell you why. I don't want to be involved in a 24-hour news cycle. That sounds terrifying. But if I gain some kind of rapport, and the Olive Garden would probably feel like I was doing press for them, and then I would like become like some person who's like scouting out new Olive Garden locations to be like, is this going to be an Olive Garden? And I'd like to think that like somehow I would ultimately like get myself like a cameo slot on a commercial, and every time like I would like, you know, appeared near a construction site, like someone would offer me free breadsticks, you know?
Oh. And then that would be a great marketing campaign, actually. Be kind of like a Carmen Sandiego or like Where's Waldo kind of thing. And then like
if they I
would
got show interviewed video by the you. Local news,
mm-hmm. and I then would someone would
claim
you
that
breadsticks.
I was doing it to improve my Italian.
Oh, that's great.
that was working on a second language. And I was, I mean, I will say, you know, I took Italian in college and I'm rusty.
Well, you've got a leg up.
Yeah, I got, you know, 2 semesters worth of college level Italian taught by a grad student. And, you know, I'm ready to see what I can do for the Olive Garden, because when I'm there, I'm family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also like that we've maybe discovered 2 really kind of large scale lifelong passion projects for you in the last couple of weeks through these
the
games.
Olive Garden and the Borders books and you.
Correct.
I want to be a part of Borders Books and Music, like, resurgence so bad.
So do I. I actually think there could be a market for it.
So bad. I just really, really, really want to promote Borders Books and Music. I shouldn't. I want to promote local bookstores.
I was going to say, like, we should do local, but also just, like, the era of the Barnes & Noble and specifically Borders. Well,
fuck Barnes and Noble. I never cared about them. I just wanted.
What's different?
So much. Have you ever been helped by a Borders employee? They're knowledgeable.
Oh, that's
people at
true.
Barnes and Noble are fucking morons. But this is what I want to say. I feel like in my new business model for Borders Books and Music, mm-hmm. we franchise them. So they're all kind of local bookstores. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
But we help the local bookstores maybe get a better rate on the books based on, like, having a little mm-hmm. bit of more purchasing power with this national chain title. It's kind of, you know what else is a franchise? Our gay Chick-fil-A, okay?
It is. You know what? And we're doing what we
it's
want with that franchise.
Franchising our platform. You know what? We're franchising it, okay? Guys, when we create our green gyms, you too can open one to power your community, because we will franchise that shit to you. Okay?
We will. Wow.
I think our new platform is franchises.
Wow, that's so dumb. Oh my God, I love it.
So stupid.
Well, but actually, it's like this weird way to, like, marry small business and large business.
I mean, it's 100%. Well, that's, I
if
mean,
if you
I
gave franchises more freedom and more support, like, rather than.
There is some stuff out there about, like, people who are, like, good franchises and shitty franchises.
I actually,
like,
think
what kind
Chick-fil-A
of franchises
is really good, like, to
I
their
I think
owners.
It's supposed to be a good one. I think so. I forget. There's some press about Subway franchises, and I don't remember if it's good or terrible.
I can't remember either, but it's strong. It's strong feedback.
It's one of the two. Yeah, there's some large feedback about the franchising of Subway. Anyway, if you too like to join our franchise cult and bring about the resurgence of Borders Books and Music, say fuck Barnes and Noble, and but make it local.
You could start a utopia with us, just real quick. Actually, we could have a utopia of all chain restaurants, but that are franchised by, like, amazing woke people, and just we have a Chick-fil-A,
gay
and a Chick-fil-A. Subway, and a McDonald's.
We have a Chick-fil-A that has one token straight employee. Everybody else is loudly gay there.
100%. Wow. Mm. You know, we could really make it happen with franchises. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go on.
I'm ready if you're ready to enter our brave new world. And if you'd like to join us, as always, you can find us on the internet via email at whyareyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyareyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And good night, good morning, good day. And you know what? Stay franchising.
Yeah. Keep doing it. Bye.
Bye.